with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium.
Opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Welcome in to the Lotus Place here. It is Wednesday, December 21st. Is this the week of Christmas? It is the week of Christmas. It's the holiday week. Yay. Merry Christmas to everybody who celebrates Christmas. I don't celebrate Christmas, but for those of you that do, happy holidays and Merry Christmas. I remember when the whole controversy started with the saying Merry Christmas or Happy New Year or which one, and don't say that to me at work and all that. Namaste, Featherlight.
Namaste.
How are you?
I'm wonderful.
Great, fantastic. And I hope that our Lotus Place family is doing well. Closing out the end of this year. It is the end of the year already. It just seems to have flown by. And it has been a very interesting year, a very enlightening, welcoming year. I enjoyed this year. I'm looking forward, as always, to 2017. So, what about you, Feather?
Yes, I have game changers that I'm...
Oh, game changers.
Yes. Looking forward to it.
I too. Well, happy winter solstice to you and our listeners. Happy winter solstice. Special spiritual time of the year for some. But I know for one thing that I will do this year, well, for this winter solstice, is begin my cleansing and my fast. And I just need to decide, like, which cleansing and what will I fast and pray and meditate on specifically, write it down and speak it out into the universe. So that's what I need to just decide, like, what type of cleansing. But I tell you one thing, the kale is delicious. The kale, some spicy, delicious little kale that you made was absolutely delicious. I love that. Now, I can fast on that. I can just eat kale. Okay, just give me that bowl of kale in the evening, and I'm good. It was just that delicious. So, I love that. And, of course, smoothies. And maybe I should share quickly my strawberry beet smoothie recipe. It's very, very simple. If you have a Ninja or a blender, whatever you use, then let's see, just I would say a pinch of beet, just like a quarter of a little beet, Not a lot, because you don't need a chunk of a beet, raw beet. Not the canned beets. Raw beets go to the produce section. Speaking of produce section, when you shop in a grocery store, you should shop on the outer perimeter of the grocery store. I think I'll put that on our health page on BTR, the new Black social media experience created by Scotty Reed. Yours truly, Scotty Reed. You should join up if you're not already on BTR. Just go to the Black Talk Radio Network. Let me just go ahead on and just plug that right quick. Just go. So on our Dr. Sabi Health tribute page, I should add this beet, strawberry beet smoothie recipe. Very simple. A chunk of a beet, just a small piece. Strawberries, of course. Pineapples. And you can add maybe like blueberries if you like. Definitely banana. And then also some of the beet leaves. That's what gives it that strawberry beet cake like feel and taste to it, texture to it. And so your banana. Well, half a banana if you're just making like one cup. I know you think in terms of one meal. What I call it, a meal for me. The one one meal for me. But okay, half a banana if it's just a glass for one person. Or you may want to make a certain amount so you can have the smoothie later. So a whole banana or half a banana. Just depends on your thickness. Thank you, Feather. The thickness desired. Right. So add your ice, coconut milk, blend it, and it is absolutely delicious. It's very, very similar to a strawberry cake, but just with an extra
so
punch.
Good, it's smooth. Yeah. And sweetness, not that sweetie sweet, but just a tiny hint. And it just,
yes,
it tastes, what's the word?
Decadent. Oh, yes, decadent. For yeah. Sure, for sure. Well, I'll tell you something that's not decadent, and that's that water in Flint is still contaminated. And so I've been still following the story, and thankfully there was a report recently about four of those people that were involved. But this was an entire conspiracy of a number of people in different agencies, and so I'm still waiting to see what will become of those ladies that worked in those executive positions with EPA. That whole email exchange between all of these people that continue to laugh and ignore the complaints and concerns of the people in Flint. So, former Flint emergency manager Darnell Early, he's one of the four people charged criminally Tuesday in connection with the Flint water crisis. And so he appeared in courtroom for arraignment, like his butt out too dry. Early and three others, former emergency manager Gerald Ambrose, I'm glad they went back and pulled him into the pot as well. And city officials Howard Croft, right, ex-public works superintendent, and Daltrey Johnson, the utilities administrator. Now, if you're going after the utilities administrator, they all face 20-year felony charges. They'll get off. Look, Snyder said he's not even concerned about it. He's totally not worried about it, but worried about being charged. Michigan Attorney General Bill, excuse me?
He's planning his next social event.
Yes. Michigan Attorney General Bill Shuddy said the four defendants, conspired to operate the Flint water treatment plant when it wasn't safe to do so. He said defendants used a phony environmental order to allow Flint to borrow money to proceed with the new Karagandy Water Authority pipeline. So that's the whole Flint water crisis. You can go back and Google some of those stories. But remember, early, he was the state-appointed emergency manager in charge of Flint in April 2014. And that's when the city switched its water source to the Flint River, was given a personal bond. See, this was all about money. All about money, to save money. So what if we poison those people? So what if the children will be generationally damaged? So what, you drink poo-poo water? So anyway, we want this land.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, we want this land. We want you to leave. We want you to move because we want this land. And see, these are the things that continue to happen in so many insidious ways. Just sneaky, sneaky, plan, plot, the thieve and steal. This is about money and land. Okay. And once they clean that darn Flint land up, that will be one of the hottest places in the nation. 20 years from now or something, that'll be some resort place, something really booming, some booming city. You see, all of the people now, they'll be too sick or dead to even care.
And everything, 20 to 30 years.
Hell yeah.
Blueprint.
Mm-hmm.
What it's going to look like.
Mm. Right. They already just pulled the whole bottom out of that place. When we were in Flint, I could not believe it. It looked, and I've never been to war, but I could imagine like a war-torn city. Mm. And that's what parts of Flint look like. Mm-hmm. And so that's just what I believe, that there is a force, just like when the levees were breached in New Orleans, a force to move a certain population out, because the population in Flint is grossly impoverished because the whole bottom was pulled out. So it's just a vicious cycle, and it's so sad. And the people are still struggling. People still need water. So I certainly want to do more than just say I'm so sad and send my prayers. But I do want to give our Lotus Place listeners an update on that. And if there is anything that you and your family feel that you could do to help, then let's do so. Now, Governor Rick Snyder, he said, I can hear him. I'm not concerned about that. I haven't done anything wrong. I'm not concerned about it at all. That's how he talks. Snyder made the comments as news broke that his total bill for outside legal fees fighting against being charged, now all charged to taxpayers, has hit $4.9 million after he gave notice of a $1.5 million increase in his criminal defense contract with Warner Norcross of Grand Rapids. Indeed. So not only are you just ignoring the fact that your people in a city that was once a city that made Michigan what it is, you want to turn your backs on them and conspire to continue to have them drink poison, filthy, poo-poo, infected, defected water. And I read that there's no water delivery on Sundays anymore, so you have to come pick up your water 6 days a week. So these people still don't have, like, running water. Let's just be clear. They still don't have clean running water. And so I want to tie this story in. Pardon me?
Problem has not been solved.
No, the problem has not been solved. So I want to put a pin in that one, unless you have some other comments on that. I want to move on to another quick story. Unless you have a comment. Okay. Now this is something else. Another story that just completely jarred me when I heard about this. Now I'll just try to sum this up quickly, because it's so sadistic and gross. I don't want to linger on the story. What I really want to emphasize is how when certain crimes are committed by certain people, they're allowed to walk free. And let's just be clear, I'm talking about if it's a white affluent child or person. Let's go back to the affluenza case. The boy ran over four people and you received probation. I mean, and then went on the run.
Right.
And you get right. this minimum amount of time, and then you'll be released and your record will be expunged and you don't have to remain in slavery like the rest of us. One of our boys selling some little marijuana or some stupid drug that they felt like they were forced to because of complete, utter disenfranchisement, poor education, poor housing, no job, underemployed. So, I mean, what are people supposed to do? Especially when you dump it in the streets and say, hey, you can make some money from it. But anyway, let me go on to this story. Three white high school football players have been accused of raping a disabled black teammate with a coat hanger. These teenagers allegedly forced the 18-year-old to the ground in the locker room as one assaulted him and another kicked him several times. And these football players, 18, 17, and 16, at Dietrich High School in
Idaho,
have been charged with sexual assault. The alleged victim, from what I read, another story, they seduced him by saying, oh, we're going to give you some hugs if you come here into the locker room. We'll give you some hugs and all of this nicety nice and the pleasantries. And they assaulted and raped and tormented and terrorized this boy. So, I wanted to specifically read this article because this is another tactic that is used whenever it's some affluent young white criminal miscreant. Then this is the description, and not just this boy. Remember Jody Harris? Was she the one that killed? Which one? They do so much. I think the Jody Harris girl, was she the one that killed her baby? And then it was the other crazy one that sliced up that man in the shower so gruesomely. And the description.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes. Google innocent look.
Mm-hmm. And they were talking about, oh, but she has these beautiful paintings in jail that she's creating, and she's raising money, and she's so beautiful and intelligent. Okay.
Pretty.
This is, yeah. Oh, she's so pretty. They're always, these criminals are also always so pretty and intelligent and beautiful. And you don't want to destroy their lives by keeping them in jail with the rest of the criminals, the rest of the people who are trying to enslave. But listen to this. Promising athlete John Howard is allegedly the ringleader of the group and is believed to be the teenager who kicked the coat hanger inside his record. Promising athlete. Excuse
me? Promising athlete.
That's what I always say, promising athlete. There were some other boys just recently promising something. Didn't want to ruin their career playing to swimming or something. The boy that raped the other girl. The boy that raped the girl behind the dumpster. Well, he was a promising swimmer. Yeah, so we can't send him to jail. So promising athlete John Howard probably sit on the damn bench. Tanner Ward, who is 17, but has been charged as an adult, is also accused of assaulting him with the team with the coat hanger. And then the 16-year-old charged as a juvenile. So both Howard and Ward, okay, they would have faced life in prison. Do you know these boys get off scot-free with community service and probation? Yep. And the boy cried for help and no one came. No one came to see. They knew exactly what was going on. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's filmed on so many cameras, as they called him chicken eater, Kool-Aid, watermelon, of course the N-word and everything else. But see, this plays into the whole mentality. You have to remember, these are some of the same things that these people, some of the same actions when our people were lynched. All of this sadistic sticking stuff in, you're cutting this off and all. So,
right.
Right. All of this. All of this. So, people, check that story out. And I wanted to bring up that to say this. People, with this Electoral College vote, the final real election that just took place on Monday, that just occurred on Monday, with the counting of the Electoral College votes, which these people have been knowing Trump was going to be president and all of this stuff. This was all a sham for Trump to be president, in my opinion, and whatever. Who cares? Sham, scam, plan, no plan, whatever. It doesn't matter. Whoever's in office, it still is what it is. My point is, these ladies have immediately planned this women's march to march on Trump, I guess the day before inauguration or whatever. I don't even know the exact date, but I keep hearing about this. Where was the march? Where was the march to march against the incarceration of our people and the reincarnation of slavery, where our people are jailed, families broken out tradition and culture by separating families? Where was that march? Nobody marched about that. Nobody's been, where was all of these women coming from all across the country to continuously march on Washington at the front door of President Barack Obama for 8 years?
8 years.
For 8 years. He received a pass. Exactly. But now you want to sit here and we're going to go march on Trump. You have no absolute effect whatsoever on this election.
It is a done deal.
None whatsoever. And if you have not figured that out yet, then I don't know what to tell you. I really don't. Because if you can't realize that you have absolutely no say-so in regards to who the president of this country will be, not at this day and time. Now, maybe when you decide you want to really uphold the Constitution, then maybe people have some rights. But at this point, forget it. And my whole thing is, where was the march to march on the systematic oppression and incarceration of our people? No. And especially these black women.
President Obama.
You jumping, always jumping on somebody else's bandwagon when you should have been marching about how these people been choking down our people on camera and shooting them in the head with these snuff films that we've been forced to watch. But you want to go march on Trump. Get the F out of here. That's all I got to say about that. Because what we're witnessing, this is a downfall of an empire. And I'm not going to go into talking about the Four Horsemen documentary that I watched because we're short of time. I do want to bring Feather Light in, but I'll come back to all of that, especially you women marching on some nonsense. I'm watching you. I got you. I see you. I see you. I really do. I see you. And they should be tired of being played. You should be tired of being played. Tired of being played.
Many of us have been played at one time or another. Mm. It's not a good feeling. But to get played over and over and over again by the same person or the same group of people,
mm-hmm.
it's like the same. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Fool me 6, 7, 8, 9. At some point, one has to get tired of being played.
Mm-hmm.
You have to just straighten up and say, wait a minute, didn't this happen? It's like one of the laws of the universe, cause and mm-hmm. effect. The law of cause and effect.
Cause and effect.
Every cause has its effect.
Any effect. So elaborate on that.
Has its cause. In other words, every effect you see in your outside or physical world has mm-hmm. a very specific cause with its origin in your inner or mental world. It's how you see yourself. If you feel a certain way about yourself, you reflect that. So whether you realize it or not, and every one of our thoughts, our words, or our actions, they set a specific effect in motion, which will come to materialize at one time or another, maybe not right away, but over time. So every thought, every action, every word is energy. And for everything in your reality is a mental creation. A lot of things we create. If in the West world, the woman had played the role of the victim for so long, and suddenly she grabbed a weapon or something, and she said, and everyone was shocked, and she said, "I no longer want to play the role of the victim." At some point, one has to say, "I no longer want to play the role of a victim." The women marching for something that has no significance. You cannot change this. But then when there was a time when unity was important, like you said, for marching against the cruelty, the beatings, the death, the incarceration, incarceration of so many of our people. Nothing is said. Over 8 years, nothing. Zip, zap. Now all of a sudden, we're going to march.
Marching. All right, let's take a break and we'll be right back. We have an awesome show for you tonight. Christopher Boyd coming in, talking about his new book, Straight Black Male. Straight Black Man, Gay Black Family. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this break.
For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
And we're back here at the Lotus Place Radio Show, and you are tuned in. And be sure to go on to Black Talk Radio Network and sign up for BTR, the new Black Social Experience. If you enjoy Facebook, then you will certainly enjoy BTR, where you can sign up for all kinds of groups, stay informed of different events going on. And I'm waiting on Delta to join. And also, let me welcome back in King B. What's up, King B? Delta.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear Delta. Yes. We are live here.
Hi.
And I'm How's going everybody? To bring in our guests also. Great. We're all well. Thank you. We're well.
Great. Lots going on.
And we want to bring in Chris Boyd. Let me welcome him into the show. Chris Boyd, are you there?
Yep, how you doing?
Yes, and we can hear you just perfectly. Welcome in, Chris.
Thank you for having me.
We want to thank you for certainly taking the time. And let me just introduce you to our co-host. Of course, we have myself, Black Rose. And this is Feather Light. She's online, and she did get a chance to read some of your excerpts. Delta, I did not get a chance to send you any of the excerpts, but you will be able to hear him read a portion of his book. And this book is, I would say, listen, if you could go online right now and download it on your Kindle so that you can follow us, and I already have this book, and then maybe we can bring Chris back and actually have like a book discussion or a topic about the book, because as you mentioned, Chris, writing this book was very therapeutic. So can't you tune in and listen, and be sure to ask questions and engage. Go online, download the book. Chris, introduce yourself and tell people how they can go ahead on and go online, and just if you have Kindle, you can start reading the book on your phone or your tablet or whatever.
Yeah, you can get the book on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, BAM, that's BooksAMillion.com, Green Ivy Publishing.com, that's actually the publishing company that did the book for me. And also in Philadelphia, we have a book store called Black and Nobel. They were really, you know, they're really influenced in my book, and they try to promote it, and they really big on there. So shout out to Hawk and down there. They actually have the book in the store, and they're going to have it available online soon also.
Welcome,
Chris. This is Heather Light. I wanted to
Nice
to meet you. It's a wonderful opportunity to have you as our guest, and I'm sure we will be so enlightened this evening. I've read several excerpts from your book, it's quite intriguing, interesting. It keeps your mind and attention straight.
I'm glad you're enjoying it. I appreciate you having me. I really do.
Well, Chris, I must say, I was speaking to you, and as we were speaking about the book, and thanks, let me give a shout out to Scotty, because Scotty's actually the one that introduced me to you and your work. So I want to give a shout out to Scotty. Much love to Scotty. Namaste, Scotty, if you're out there. Namaste, namaste. I know he's behind enemy lines always fighting, so thank you, Scotty. So we were speaking, and the title caught me, and I immediately just downloaded the book on my Kindle so that I could go ahead on and start reading it, because after reading some of the excerpts, I was like, oh man, I just really want to read this book. And I read the book, like, I think it takes you like 3 hours and some change to read the book, and I just sat and read it like from page to page in one night. And the book is certainly a page turner, and me being an Aries, sometimes I can become very distracted even if it's a very good book. But
I'm an
it
Aries
was nice.
Also, by the way.
No wonder. See, I could tell. And so for that book to captivate me like that, and for me to sit down, which I mean, I can't sit and read a book. It's not a very long book. It's only like, what, about 170-something pages. So you can actually sit and read the book, right? And I would definitely say read this book, because this book has just about everything you could possibly think of, Delta. All that sex that you like and drama, Delta, the book has some of that. It has some religion. You know how she loves her religion, but it has Jehovah Witness religion in it. But she loved her religion. And it has family and a sense of community. That's highlighted in the book, and I know I certainly can appreciate that, and we'll get more to that. But I want to know, how did you decide to write this book? Like, what inspired you to just say, let me put this story on paper?
Okay, well, it started when I don't know, a lot of things that happened in the book, everything is a lot more that happened, but it's everything that happened in my life. Sometimes when it happens as a child, it affects you as you get older, you know what I mean? And I found out that I was harboring some feelings for family members, you know, and things that I just couldn't go on with my life. I needed some kind of outlet. And I'm really big on hip-hop music. Hip-hop music, I've always been in that. I always, you know, used to rap or whatever. But as you get older, you know, you can't just go making songs about, you know, what happened when you was a child, because it's not the same. So I actually met a friend of mine that I knew from childhood, and he was like, you know, you got to find a way to, you know, let things go. And what's your channel? And I said, writing. He was like, well, write it down. And I thought about it, and I started writing. And when I started writing, it just kept going and kept going. And I was like, man, this would be a nice book. And then I thought about it, and I was like, how about that? You know. And then I started thinking about how many other people who might go through similar situations in their family, mm-hmm. you know, maybe I can help them, or maybe they can read it and they have their outlet or find an outlet to channel what anger they had or whatever it was, you know. So that's just how I came up with it, and that's just what happened. And it's crazy because it seemed years are going so quick, but it was like took me 2 years to write it, you know, because when you write your own story, it's almost like you're reliving every moment, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So times I had to just stop. I just had to stop and let it go, and then started writing again. And the one time my computer crashed and I had to start over again. So, yeah.
Oh, no.
You know, yeah, so, but it was meant to be, and I'm glad, you know, that it's finally done. But I do want to say one thing, you know, my mm-hmm. book doesn't, I'm not condoning, I'm not condemning anybody's lifestyle, you know, because I'm really in the belief that whatever you do in life, you know, it's for God to deal with and God to judge, and I'm not a judgmental person, so I'm not, that's not what it's about. It's not about embarrassing any family members or putting them out there or voicing my anger and letting it out. It's not even about that. It's therapy. Now I feel so much better, you know. I feel so much better now. Yep, I do. So
I like the way that you said that it's not about trying to bash anyone or anything like that. It's more about you and the therapy for you, and you being able to just release in whatever kind of way, because I think we can release in so many different ways. But writing is certainly therapeutic. I remember when I had to have therapy behind a family situation, and my therapist suggested that I write a letter to that person. And she said, whether you mail it or not. And that's always something that I've heard the therapists use for people. And I think it is, because it's like writing down your goals, but just to be able to write, whether you publish it, burn the letter, send it to that person. But I, myself being a writer, I would always say, put it on paper and write it in a book. And we have something else in common. I just have to say, and we can get more into talking about the book, and this is talking about the book, actually. What made you come up with naming your titles, adding a song of that time period to the title of your book?
Oh, okay. Book.
And let's go through some of your titles.
Okay. I don't know what made me actually do that, like, really put it there, but I know every time I wrote a certain part of a chapter, it's like took me back to a certain time, you know what I mean? A song.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just took me right there. Now, at the beginning of the song, the beginning chapter, the Genesis, I put the song Ooh Chow from the Five Stair Steps. I like that song, but I wasn't even born to hear that song, of course, because it's the beginning, because it actually came out in, like, I think the year I was born, you know? And, so I just, you know, that was just, it fitted to me the situation. But most of the other songs, it was because it was the songs were out during that time, and that's what it reminded me of, you know?
Yes. I love that. So share some of the titles, and then let's talk a little bit more about your book. We have to get into this book. I know, of course, Sir Duke, because I love Stevie Wonder. That was definitely one of my favorites.
Right.
And then I think you have Lady Love. Ooh, Lou Ross. Lord have mercy.
Yeah. And if you, that song,
I love that.
The crazy, that song right there is crazy, because at that time it was pertaining to my mom. It was my mother, and she was dating the woman she was dating at the time. And they used to love that song, and they used to play it so much because it fitted their lifestyle. Lady Love. They took Lou Rawls' words and took it to a whole nother level, but it fitted. You know what I mean? It fitted. And they played that song to death. And I actually used to hate that song when I was little. I did. But it fitted in, you know, what the chapter is talking about.
Mm-hmm. in the chapter.
Right.
Reunited by Peaches and Herb. Now, that was one of my favorites. I used to love that song. Yeah. Reunited. Canty, you remember Reunited, King B? Reunited and it feels so good. I know King B remembers that one.
Sweet.
And to say, oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Now this is one, and this is let's see, which one is this? Let me find it. Because I think this is one of Aja's songs. Yes. A New Beginning, I'm Coming Out by Diana Ross. That's Aja's. Oh, one of her favorites. Yes. So he has a book title.
Yeah.
With I'm Coming Out. I love it. So tell us about your brothers and your childhood growing up and your mother. And what was it like?
Well, my brothers, they stayed with my grandmother. They lived with my grandmother. Mm-hmm. And me, I was raised living with my mother. And my brother, he would come, you know, on the weekends. My oldest brother, Kurt, oldest brother, he has some mental issues. So he didn't come as much. But me and my brother that was older, next older than me, Calvin, he was, you know, he was the one that would come all the time. You know, he would be there. But him and my mother they didn't have the greatest relationship. It was like a situation, I guess, where I was more closer to my mother. My oldest brother, Keith, he was more closer to my grandmother because he was the oldest. So my brother, Calvin, he was like in the middle, you know what I mean?
Okay.
But by him being closer to my age, man, him were the closest. And my mother, when I was born, I don't think she really intended on having me because, as you see, she gave her other two to my grandmother. But she was with a lady at that time who was more domesticated and was like, you know, why don't you have the baby and I'll help you and this and the other. So, you know, along I came, you know. Yep. But they didn't last because my mother, she lived a wild lifestyle, you know. And
now, is this the relationship with Zelda?
Zelda, yeah. Yep.
So when your mother and Zelda were together, and your mother's name is Dolores in the book, right. And so describe that lifestyle. You said that it was pretty much a normal lifestyle to you. It was normal
because she kept her the lifestyle away from me during that time. You know, I was like, the home was, we had a nice house in Winfield, and it was nice. You know, I know you from Texas, so you don't know where Winfield is, but it was a nice family house, and you know, but it was normal.
And how old were you at this time?
That's when I was like three. Yeah,
three, four,
you know, around that age, maybe four. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know really much because my mother was really adamant about keeping her lifestyle away from me. She wouldn't let me, I didn't know anything about what was going on. I mean, she used to have parties all the time. Like, she always kept the bar stocked, and she loved music. Music was always blasting. But Zelda would be the one that would take care of me. And I noticed, like, even when my brother Calvin came over, like, she would, you know, like, get us to do family things, go get ice cream and stuff. She was family-oriented. But my mother, you know, she was wild. Yeah, my mother was wild.
But did Zelda live there in the house?
Yeah, she lived there in the house. And I think as a child, I didn't even really realize that they were together.
A couple.
I thought she more was like the maid or the nanny, you know, because she would get me up in the morning and, you know, for school, because a lot of times my mother worked and everything, but she partied, you know, so a lot of times Zelda would do things like that. And I didn't really notice, you know, at that time that what was really going on, you know, too much. A lot of times, things that I hadn't found out was through Calvin, because he would tell me, like, you know, older brother tell younger brother, this is that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he put me down with a lot of things.
But then, being 3 years old, I wonder, like, would children even be able to differentiate and like, know? I mean, what do you guys think? I mean, at 3 years of age, would you know, or would you even wonder if nobody's talked to you about it or what? What do you think?
Nope.
Feather, Delta?
I did.
You did. I wonder, I mean, I don't know.
I think you do. I think you know. A child know what's going on because in the early stages of their upbringing, that's why you have to not let them see you do certain things and say certain things, because they see what's going on. A kid know the difference. Believe me, they know the difference.
What made me wonder one time, and I think this is what made me ask Calvin about what was going on. I remember seeing Zelda, she lived in South America, she was going to the plane, and my mother took her to the plane, mm-hmm. and my mother her kissed, and my mother was crying as she was leaving. I never forget that. And that made me wonder, because I, you know, that was weird for me. I never seen two women kiss before, you know?
How old were you then?
Probably four. Yeah, about four. And that's what made me, so I started being curious. I was a curious little kid, anyway. Yeah. Yeah, so.
So, when you, I guess, of course, seeing two people kiss, and like you said, you never actually witnessed two women kiss, and I kind of would think right. by that time, maybe. I don't have any children, so I don't really know, like, the different, I guess I would say, like, learning phases when this would be a good time to start talking to them about these things. Because one thing that you mentioned that really stuck with me that was so poignant was you said when you wrote this book, you wanted this book to be about how decisions, a certain person's decisions could affect, like, an entire family. And so, like, that decision that she made to keep that away from you at such a young age, do you think that you would have preferred for her to maybe tell you her lifestyle at an earlier age prior to when she actually exposed you to her lifestyle? Or
no, I think I get what you're saying. I think that if she would have continued with, you know, besides me seeing the kiss or whatever, that really, you know, sometimes it that happened, but that probably would have just went away from me after a while. But mm-hmm. I think if she would have kept that frame, the way she lived her life then, at that time, if it would have stayed like that, I probably would have been more, I would have eased more into it. And then as I got older, she could have maybe started having talks with me and exposed me. But as you see, the way I wrote the book, I really had to show the difference in the relationships and how she changed. I think it was a change, you know. It was a change. And how mm-hmm. she kind of, like, put that in our faces, you know. It just got worse.
I think Feather has a question for you.
Yeah.
What age were you actually, it just was thrown in your face? Like, oh, wow.
Probably 7. It got bad around that time, yeah. Because what happened is, after her and Zelda, she actually chased Zelda away, because she would curse her out. I would hear her curse her out a lot. Like, I used to hear this. My mother would, like, she'd argue, and she'd drink, and when she drank, she'd get, you know, she'd tell anybody, you know, tell them off, you know. And a lot of times I heard her telling Zelda to get out, and you can get the F away, you know, that type of stuff. And I would hear the arguments, and Zelda would cry because she was really kind of meek and kind of mild-mannered. And then one day, it was like a big fight. I never forget it. And it was dishes broken, and my mother, she threw paint all on the couches and, like, told her to get out. And that was the day that Zelda left. And I never seen her. I didn't see her leave, her actually leave. I just woke up that morning, and she was gone, and I never seen her again. You know? And then it was like from near, you know, we moved because I guess Zelda was I think she worked for an insurance company. And I think her and my mother's money probably was together, but that kind of, the income changed. So we had to go, you know, to an apartment down to a different neighborhood and a different status of living. And mm-hmm. that's when she changed. Yeah, that's when she changed.
So do you think, let me ask you this, do you think that because in reading your book, it it seems like you moved quite a bit for such a young age, and that may be kind of normal for some people, especially like military children. But I think kind of just moving as much as you did, I just wonder, how were you able to like adjust to that? Do you think that it was difficult for you and your family, or was it something that you were just able to endure because you went through quite a bit as a child? This is definitely a story of betrayal and violence and sex and love, happiness, community, just everything. It's a mixture. It's like a soap opera. Like I said, you definitely need to push this as a film. But
I sat here before.
I was here.
I even told you, but he was not there.
I was here.
When were you there?
Last night.
No, you weren't.
Where this, oh my goodness, what is going on with that? Some type of interruption in the line. I don't know. It's pardon us. But anyway, so the move, the constant moving, how did that affect you? Because, I mean, for me, it may be constant moving, but it may have been something that you were able to adjust to. Talk to us about that.
It was crazy. The moving actually wasn't even, I guess, so much else was going on at our time. The moving wasn't really that much of an issue, you know, for me as a child, because you just pretty much, you know, it's crazy. As a child, sometimes you just go along with the flow, you know? Mm-hmm. You go along with the flow. I had no choice, so, you know, in that matter. But what happened is, a lot of times, like, my brother Calvin, when we moved from Winfield, and, you know, Zelda wasn't with us no more, we moved to an apartment, and my mother brought Calvin along, and so he was there. And when he was there, for some reason, it always was better. You know, my mother was wild out. Like, she would have girlfriends, but they weren't in relationships, and she had this one girlfriend that she used to always come over, and they used to fight every night. I'm not exaggerating this. He would tell you something. When Stevie Wonder song came on, Love in the Need of Love, when every time that song would play, we knew they was about to fight, because that's when
that was their fight song.
Songs of the Key of Life album was out, and once that song come on, it seemed like they fought every night, and it would be and it would be constant fight, you know. So
constant fighting.
Did this make you tense and
yeah,
like
it did?
Yeah,
it did. It did. I hated it. Yeah.
One other thing I wanted to ask you before we move any further, I want to go back to when you said that Zelda was the person who really looked after you, put you to bed, things like that. So your mother was not very affectionate, I take it.
She had she had times. It's crazy. We used to think that when my mother was it's messed up to say this, but when she was drinking, she was more sociable with us. She was more interactive, put it that way.
Yeah.
Because when she was drinking, she was more fun, and, you know, she'd be like, whatever, you know, and play. But when she was sober, and she would be like, she's in her room, she got her glasses down, she's reading. You know, I do remember her used to read me. I had a big Disney book, and she would read me the stories or whatever. But she was also really, really stern, and I think she used to treat my brother bad, because, like, I know the times, like, I put in the book the times, like, when we'd be in there talking and we would whisper, and if she hear us talking, she would come in there, and just like she would beat him purposely, you know, because he was the oldest. Wow. And it was like a lot of her anger. I don't know why, but she's like, she used to take it out on him. Like, I would get a little, but he would get a lot. And it was, you know, it was messed up. Yeah, it was messed up.
But I would like to say something else.
Go ahead, Delta.
Okay, I was just wondering, and I was listening that the young man was saying that his mother was more kind when she was drinking and stuff, and more sociable. Couldn't your mother could have been hiding some pain? Have you found out? I hadn't seen your book yet, but could your mother have been hiding pain? Something may have happened in her life.
It did, but it's not in this book. It's not in the book, but it's things I found out from writing this book that happened to her, you know, that if you understood it, you would. I'm not going to even say it, but it's crazy. It put it out there, you know. It would put out there why she was the kind of parent she was, you know, at that time.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying, because most of the people that you see that have the, you know, the act like this, they have been molested, they have, or else they have
some kind of
something have went on in their life. Because I had my mother-in-law, my first mother-in-law, she was very not affectionate. She never did hug my husband. He told me about it. She never did hug. He couldn't figure out why his mother was like that. But as we was married a few years, he found out that his mother had been molested by her father. Then it all made sense. She didn't know how to show love.
Right.
Didn't know how. So that's what I'm saying. Some things can go on in a person's life to make them act the way they act.
Certainly could. Well, I know, like my dad, although, and we talked about this too, Kristen, speaking about, because you talk about your father in the book. A lot of people always say black boys don't have their fathers in their lives, but you had your father in your life. And I had my father in my life. And even though he's always been in my life, he was a great provider. But as I was coming up as a very young girl, my dad didn't really sit down and talk to me and have conversations with me. And he didn't make me feel like I was his baby girl. I felt like a liability. You know, like, I'm gonna take care of you. I love you. You know I love you and care about you. I'm not going to tell you and say it all the time. But if I have food on the table and clothes on your back, then it means I love you. And so people have so many different ways of showing love, because even though people may hear, oh, your mom was a lesbian, oh, she was abusive, but in this story, you give the reader so many instances of how your mom showed love regardless of the beatings and spankings or children being over here. So when we come back, if we could just go into reading that chapter, I believe it's Coffee and Deep and Coffee Meets Deep. Let's go into that chapter with the whole event that, like, pretty much changed your life, the decision that was like the segue into the whole change in your life experiences. And so we'll be right back. Looking forward to hearing that. Stay tuned. If you have any questions or comments, do call in to Love Space Radio. We have author Chris Boyd here with us tonight, author of Straight Black Man, Gay Black Family. And we'll be right back.
Okay.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
And we're back here at the Lotus Place with author Chris Boyd, speaking on this riveting book, Straight Black Man, Gay Black Family. And something that you said you really want readers to be able to take away from this book, I don't want you to forget to share that with us, but you have tuned in at the perfect time if you're just tuning in, because he's getting ready to read us an excerpt from his book. Could you share that with us?
Okay, ready?
We are ready. Oh, before you do that, please let people know how they can purchase your book. Maybe they want to go ahead on and purchase it right quick and download it so that they could catch up and read along.
Yep. You can go to Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, BAM.com, which is Books a Million, Green Ivy Books, Green Ivy Publishing.com. And like I said, it's also, you know, if you at Broad and Airy in Philadelphia, you can go to Black and Nobel, and they have the physical copy, the hard copy. You can come get the paperback, rather. Yeah.
There you go. That's it. And me, I always like to, I do enjoy going to bookstores. We have a half off and walking distance from me. But if it's okay. Something that I really want quickly, I just go ahead on and download it on my Kindle. So people can just go ahead on and download it too. But yeah, go to the bookstore. Support the bookstores, especially your local bookstore. All right, Chris, give us all a right. read.
Okay. I guess playing outside all day, I must have tired out because I watched television for about 15 minutes and I fell fast asleep. I woke up to people screaming. "I'll kill you, dyke bitches," said Mr. Raymond. "Hold that motherfucker down," said my mom. And then I heard the glass breaking. I slowly got out of my bed and walked toward my mother's room. The sounds got louder. I saw Mr. Raymond on her bed being held down by Vicky. He was trying to get up, but my mother had a pipe and was hitting him across his head and his face. I ran back to my room as fast as I could. I jumped into my bed, got under my covers. Muffled crying sounds came out as I held the pillow to my mouth so I wouldn't be heard. I was peeking out of the covers just enough to keep my eyes toward the hallway that led to my mother's room. Then I saw Mr. Raymond stagger past my room with a switchblade in his hand, leaving a trail of blood as he headed to the front door. I was so frightened that I was frozen, but then I was unthawed by the screams that came from my mother's room. I could tell that the screams were Vicky's, and they were followed by my mother's voice of desperation and urgency. I got out of my bed once more, this time with the thought that they may need my help. Once I got to the doorway of the room, I was again in a state of shock because blood was everywhere. Blood had covered the bed. It was splattered on the walls and the floors. I followed the blood and the sound of Vicky screeching to the bathroom. I saw my mom holding Vicky's hand over the sink with the water running, trying to rinse the blood down the drain, but it was coming out too quickly. I saw a cut between her index finger and her thumb that was so long and deep that her thumb appeared to be hanging off. "Go back to your room, Chris," my mother yelled, but I couldn't turn away from what I was seeing. Then I heard footsteps, and behind me were the paramedics and four policemen. The lady cop put her arm around me to ease me away from the crime scene. She led me to the living room. She tried comforting me and by assuring me that everything would be all right, but it didn't help. I saw them take Vicky out and place her in the ambulance. Then a male officer came into the room, to the living room, and said that my dad was on the way to get me because my mother needed to go to the hospital. She was wearing a yellow blouse that night, and it had blood all on it. I thought it was all Vicky's blood since she had lost so much. It seemed that before Mr. Raymond had injured Vicky, that he had stabbed my mom in her chest, inches from her heart.
Now, Chris, how old were you when you witnessed this? What was your age at this time?
7 years old.
7 years of age. I could not even imagine. I witnessed some things going on in my house, but nothing by far as somatic and traumatic as that. For me, it just would have been for me. For you, what was that experience like?
It was traumatizing. It was traumatizing. I mean, the thing is that my dad and my mother, it was crazy, lived on the same block. My dad lived in the middle block. My mother lived on the corner. Mm-hmm. So fortunately, at that time, you know, he was there, or whatever. But even though he was there for me during that time, which was one of the few times in my life, it was nothing that nobody could do. It was like I kept seeing it play in my head. Then Mr. Raymond, to give y'all background of the story, Mr. Raymond and Vicky, my mom's girlfriend, they were a couple, and that's how my mom met him. Like Mr. Raymond would come over to the house, and they would come over. They would be at speakeasy and drink or whatever. And my mom liked Vicky, and Vicky was actually half her age. You know, Vicky was actually the age of my oldest brother.
Your mom liked him kind of young.
Yeah, she liked him young.
Just like so, a lot of men do.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
right.
So she and she was scoping her out, you know. And so then I started seeing Vicky come to my mom's house without Mr. Raymond, you know. And that's when I started figuring out things. And Vicky was then night. Next thing you know, Vicky's in the room, and I liked Vicky because I had a crush on her because she seemed young, like she was really really cool. And so I had like a little my own little crush on her, you know.
Little boy crush on.
My mom, she was in love with that lady. Yeah, she was in love, and she took her away.
You think your mom loved Zelda more than Vicky, or Vicky more than Zelda?
I think Zelda loved my mother more than my mother loved her. You know,
okay.
I think my mother loved Vicky more than she loved any woman that she ever been with. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And the thing is that yeah. So that night that they came over. From what I, you know, started gathering after I started hearing things, my mother, like, she was really bold too. She was like tough. She didn't care. She would fight anybody. She didn't care. So my mother, like, basically let him know, like, you know, she's no longer your woman. and he wasn't having it. You know?
Wow.
And he was an old man. The thing is, he was old. He was older than my mom. You know, he was like maybe about. I think Miss Raymond at least was 60 years old. He was really cool too, because he used to give me money and stuff. So for him to do that, you know, it was crazy. And I don't know exactly how it played out before that, you know, exactly how it went out, because I was asleep. But when I woke up to, and he ended up getting arrested or whatever, but you know, my mom, my dad, he, you know, he took care of my mom. Like after she got out the hospital, he took care. Like she went to live with him, and she took care of him. He took care of her, and I was living there too because we didn't want to go to that apartment. I was like traumatized to go to that apartment. I used to think that he was going to come and get me. It was crazy.
Mr. Raymond was going to come get me.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I used to tell my dad that, and people, you know, he'd be like, "No, he's no," because my dad even knew Raymond, so he was like, "No, he wouldn't know. You know, you don't have to worry about nothing." But I just kept seeing that. You know, that vision in my head. And so when my mom got better, you know, I think my dad, he loved the, that's another one, he loved my mom. My dad loved my mom, but my mom wasn't into him, you know. And
well, you know what? I want to go back, before we go into that, I really want to go back to, you mentioned how you live down the street from your father. You and your mom live down the street from your father. So just share with us, like, how did that arrangement start?
Because we had a little apartment after we had moved from Chester Avenue. My brother Calvin had went back with my grandmother, and my mother had this little apartment. It was like this little tiny rinky dink apartment. It was just me and her, and she hated it. But I think that was like a period when she was like detoxing almost. Like she wanted to get away. It was like a secluded little spot. But I think after she kicked me out of that, she was like, I need to move. And my dad, he knew a lot of the guys that owned that apartment, his apartment owned a lot of apartments around there, and the apartment he had was happened to be at the corner. So, you know, he probably gave her money. I don't know if you know how it happened, but he probably gave her money to tell her to move up the front so we could be closer to him. I don't know, you know, because to me, it was always like he wanted her, and if it was all of us, he'd be good, you know?
I find that so interesting in so many ways because, I think the significance of your story is one significant point is the fact that your father was in your life, even though you didn't have like the traditional family arrangement, but he made provisions for you and your mom to move close so that he could be close to his family. And I think that's so commendable of your father, because he could have easily said, she's a lesbian, I'm sick of trying to fool with her and have a family. But he was still willing to do so much and to be in your life. In the book, you mentioned that you and your father were so close and you looked like him. People would call you Little Jim. His name was Jim, and so they would call you Little Jim.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I wouldn't give him that much credit. I'm sorry.
You don't want to give him that much credit. Okay. Okay.
You know why? Only reason why is because he would come around when it would seem like to me when it was convenient for him. Just like, you know, he might have, I think he was a construction worker. You know, I think he would offer my mom money when he knew that she needed it. And, you know, I think she took it when she needed it, you know? So she wanted to move. I'm sure he probably said, I'll give you the money, D, to put, you know, and I'll get a house for you, apartment. She took it, you know. But she's also was the type of person like, yeah, I'm going to do this, but don't you think you're going to run me, because it's not going to happen, because I am who I am. So after she got injured and, you know, he said, you know, she stayed down there for a few days, for weeks. And I never forget, I would not go outside to play. I wouldn't do anything. I stayed, he had like a little couch in his room, and she stayed in bed healing because her lungs had collapsed and she was weak and frail. And I would just stay by her side. I would not move, would not go nowhere, you know. And, I was, but it's crazy. After she got better, she went right back to Vicky. So he was salty and he was pissed, and, you know, and it was just what it was, you know.
Chris, was there something about your father that makes you who you are now? Anything about your father?
It makes me a better father. Something about my father that made me a better father. Yeah, because I just didn't like. I'm not a father on convenience. You know, I have four kids, and I love my kids more than anything. And they always been unconditionally loving to me. You know, they don't care. They hold me down no matter what. So I never, from what I learned from him, is not to be that type of father. And if you, when you read the book, I don't want to tell the whole book, but it's certain how me and him parted ways. It was really sad. It was really sad. And it was something he did and what he did, and it was messed up. And I could never be a father that put my kids under conditions, you know? That's what he did to me. You know? So that's why, I wouldn't give him all
that. But a lot of black men back in that time, I'm not making excuses for them, in which I'm a little older than, they really didn't know how to show love. And I hate to say that. They really didn't know how to show love. The only way they ever know how to show love is by the ones that ever showed anything is by working and providing and putting food on the table. That's how they show love. But the most important thing of all is if kids never see love in a home,
right,
it's hard for them to express love. Think about that. It's hard for people to. It really is, because I can give you a perfect example. My boys, I have three sons, and they saw their father and me very affectionate towards each other. And my mother used to say this all the time. And she said, I've never seen no boys. She said, you got the most kissing and old boys I ever seen. They just love to hug and kiss all the time. People have to show an example before the kids. If you show your kids how to be affectionate and you show your kids how to be loved, they can be loved. And a lot of, and I hate to say it, and I'm not taking up for, parents that's dysfunctional, but I must say this. A lot of parents do not, the average black person back in those days, they didn't know how to. They really didn't. Because they were so beat it down when they came from the fields and different things, a lot of them didn't know how.
Well, you know, Delta, I've mentioned before how my father, he actually did kind of talk about that to me, how after being on the job and called nigger all day long, he was in a bad mood. But I think you were getting ready to say something, Feather.
Yes. I have an Asian friend. She's learning American ways, and she will ask me different questions. And I had expressed to her that coming up, my mother never really showed a lot of affection. I mean, we always had everything we needed. The house was always nicely decorated, and she always wore nice clothes, and so did we. But so for saying, I love you, I didn't get that. When I was coming up, I didn't get any hugs when I was coming up. And so I had expressed it to her because she'd expressed some things to me about her mother and some problems that she had. So she said, you know, you told me that about your mother, but then I look at you and your daughter, and you and your daughter are so affectionate and so loving to each other. I thought that when parents, our children imitate their parents, I thought that's the way it was. And I said, well, not all the time. Sometimes children pick up what they see in their parents, and then sometimes they do just the opposite. Like Chris was saying, sometimes they say, I don't want to bring my child up like that. And so that's what I said. I said, I want to show my daughter the love that I didn't get when I was coming up, because I did not want her to feel like I felt. So it could go both ways, Chris's example and my example, and then the children doing the exact things that their parents did. It right. just depends. It just depends. Actually, it depends on the effect that it has on the child.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
Let me give out the phone number just in case anyone has a question for you before we close out. 866-510-9025 if you'd like to call in and ask a question of Chris and his book and his experiences. Oh my goodness, in this book. And let's see, you mentioned something, Featherlight, that I really want to actually have Chris expound on. Like the decisions and people going either way. There's been a lot of discussion that if gay parents raise a child, that child will automatically or could more than likely come out gay, or there's a worry that their child would be gay. Right. Talk about your experience and your brothers and what was your life like, because clearly your life certainly is, you didn't automatically become gay because your mother was a lesbian.
Right. I don't know. I remember, you know, I don't know what his, you know, why he's gay or whatever. That's something I guess we would have to ask him, you know. But the thing is, he dated girls too. So, you know, I think a lot of times when he was coming up, like, he would try to, you know, he didn't want me to know, especially that he was gay. But I didn't care.
Is your middle brother?
This is my brother. Yeah. And my mother, I remember there's a part in the book where as he was, I don't know, he must have been switching one day or doing something that girls do, and my mother beat him up. Like, you know, she came in, like, she beat him up because, you know, he was acting feminine. And she didn't like that, you know? And I don't know if he was doing it to piss her off, because them two used to bump heads so much. So at one point, I don't know if he just, you know, like, you know what, you lived your life like this, now I'm going to live my life like this, because I don't know how far we can go, but when my grandmother passed away, that's when another thing, that was the main thing that changed everything, you know, because...
How did it change things?
It changed things because my mother then had to have a decision. She had to take care of my oldest brother, Keith, Calvin, and me. You know, that the responsibility was on her. My mother got away with a lot of responsibility by putting it on my grandmother. So she was gone. Now it was it was a house that was there that she had to deal with. It was us, you know, my brother having his mental issues. You know, it was too much for her. And she would, like, I would constantly hear her, like, drinking and saying, I'm not for this. And she'd be talking to Vicky and saying, I'm not for this. And I don't want to, she used to say things like, let him take the house. He think he grown anyway, talking about my brother Calvin. Because, you know, them two bumped heads so much. And she made that decision, and that's what she did. I'd never forget, she called me and Hellman one day and said, listen, and Vicky was laying on the bed, and she looked at us and said, this is what I want. Basically saying, I don't want to do this mother thing. I want to do this. That was the most thing that, like, hurt me to my heart, you know, because, like I said, I was always with her. It might have didn't hurt him as bad because he was always with my grandmother for the most part,
off and on, but it crushed me. And that was like at the time when, like, he used to hate her. Like, he used to say to me, like, I can't stand her and I hate her. And I could never understand that. And at that time, I felt the same way as he did. And that's what she did. She got up and she took Vicky and they went to the Poconos to some resort and worked and left us three in the house. So she left a brother, an older brother that had mental problems, 8-year-old, seven, whatever I was at that time, 8 or 7, and a 16-year-old in the house by herself.
Same for yourself. But she was sending money, but you guys are still there, basically trying to take care of yourselves.
Right. She would send money, but then it's like it stopped. She stopped sending. Like, you know what I mean? It just stopped.
Oh.
And my brother, if it wasn't for him, we probably would have been put in the home, because he really got put into the role of becoming a man really quick. And he did it. I remember when my grandmother died, we were still getting checks. Like, they were still sending Social Security checks. That's when they used to come to the house.
Mm-hmm.
And he would call, and he would disguise his voice as a woman, because he was good at doing that type of crazy stuff. He would disguise his voice as a woman to call around, because my grandmother used to cash her checks at the market around the corner. She would get groceries, and then they would give her the remaining balance of the food, you know? They would get the rain, after she would get the food, get the remaining balance away. He would disguise his voice as her and say, and put in an order for food, and then say, I'm going to send my grandkids around there. They didn't even know she had died. He did that for about 3 or 4 months.
After your grandmother had passed. After
my grandmother passed, and then eventually the checks got cut off. And it was cool, because we was young, and he was spending the money. We was eating out, and it was all fine then. You know, it was kind of cool. But then it started getting into the winter months, and then the checks weren't coming. My mom wasn't sending money, and then that's when things got real. And it got tough. That's the thing. Non-existent. He knew this was happening, and he was a non-existent. Non-existent. Never came over. He might have came over one time, like at the beginning, maybe to give, but he just stopped coming. That's because my mother wasn't involved. And that's where I'm talking about.
I picked up on that.
Now, father could have stepped in and come there to help out, collect you, bring him over there with him. At least that
you don't have to.
I do feel that.
Yeah, you can do that on your own. He could do that.
Right.
He could have done that. Yeah. Right. Yeah, I don't find one.
And things got bad. Things got real bad. And
what do you want people to take away from your book when they read this book? What is something that you want people to definitely keep with them and think about and consider in life or lesson?
I want people to realize that no matter what whatever you choose in life, it's how you do things sometimes that can affect your whole entire family, you know. It's not about being, like I said, my mother could have did this with a man, and the thing she did has been a man, it would still have been just as bad. But, you know, things also made it different, because I got ridiculed, you know, her and her girlfriend fighting out in the street and, you know, shirts getting pulled off and all that type of stuff. When kids see that and they laughing at you, and you know all the neighbors, it puts a child in a place. So that's what I'm trying to say, is she would have kept her style like she was when we were with Zelda, which was more domesticated. And then you know, as I got older, talk to me about, well, listen, you know, I'm with a woman and this is what I'm doing. And, you know, it'd have been so much better. But she pretty much just said the hell with everything, and like she told me on many occasions, like, this is my woman, you know, and, you know, if nobody don't like it, or if your father don't like it, then you can let him, you know, stuff like that, or whoever don't like it, and, you know, and she just got, you know, that's just how she was. She was in love and didn't care about anything else. And my book, I want you people to realize that when you raising these kids, these decisions that you make, it affects them. It affects them how they raise their kids, you know. And some people, like, everybody don't take that example and say, well, I'm gonna be a better parent. They don't, every, like she was saying, everybody don't do that. Some people do, like I chose to, but some people, it start becoming a pattern. They do the same thing to their kids. Then their kids grow up and they do the same thing, you know?
Right.
And
right.
That's when it's not good.
No, it's not good. Not good at all.
And also, I want people to, I would like people, I think people need to talk. I think people, when you have a member in your family that's gay, mm-hmm. and, you know, you might not like it a lot of times, especially in our black families, we are, you know, oh, yeah, you know, cousin such and such is gay.
Taboo, has been taboo.
I mean, if you, you know, feel the kind of way, maybe if you opened up more, maybe you can appreciate that. You know, don't, you know, distance yourself from a family member because that what they chose, you know, that's what they chose. You know, you either, if you're going to love somebody, you got to love them. You're going to love them regardless who they are. That's how I believe anyway.
I like what you said about no judgment.
I had a friend of mine that called me not so long ago when he heard about the book, and this is what I want the book to do. He called me and told me that he had a situation where he found out one of his family members, which I don't say which family members, but he found out a close family member was gay and it's crushing him, you know? Mm-hmm. And I told him, like, listen.
He was crushed? You said he was crushed?
He was crushed. Okay. You know, and to keep it real, it was his son, you know, on top of that. So for a man, you know, yeah, it hurts, you know. Mm-hmm. So, but I'm letting them know, like, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to stop loving your son because he chose to be gay? No, well, you know, you're going to have to embrace it and find a way. Y'all going to have to talk, first of all. Don't avoid him. Talk, and then maybe y'all could deal with that. Maybe you don't have to accept his, condone what he's doing, but maybe you can find a way where you can, y'all can still have some kind of, you know, bond. I would hate for somebody to, yeah, I would hate for somebody to abandon their whole family or a family member because of a sexual orientation.
Because of a sexual orientation. Do you have a question,
I have
Delta?
A granddaughter. She just told me that she was gay, and she's 13. And I asked her, "How do you know you're gay?" And she said, she responded back to me, she said, "Grandmother, I've been feeling this way ever since I was in the second grade." She said, "When I went to school in the second grade, I didn't like boys. I liked girls. But I did express this to my granddaughter. I told her, I said, I don't agree with it, but I'm not going to turn my back on you. I'm still going to love you." I said, "But now, you cannot bring that around me." I said, "Now, if you brought her here," I said, "she better keep her hands to herself, and you better keep your hands." No, I'm just being honest. This is exactly what I said. I said, "You better keep your hands to yourself, and she keep her hands to yourself." I said, "Respect." I said, "Respect, you know grandmama don't agree with it." I said, "But
grandma don't want to see it." All right.
"So I'm not going to turn them out. Like, some people won't let them come at all."
Right.
What I'm saying,
I get you.
I'm just saying, have respect for me. You can come here and eat at Granny's house.
And I think that people, definitely should respect another person's house if they don't want a certain behavior. That's just like, if I don't drink alcohol, then don't get upset when I tell you don't bring alcohol into my house. Let's take a break, and then we'll take some last comments for Chris, and we'll be right back. You're tuned in to the Lotus Place Radio. Stay tuned after this break.
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium.
All right, and we're back here at the Lotus Place. If you have a question or a comment for Chris Boyd, who has joined us tonight, author of Straight Black Man, Gay Black Family, and if you're on the line at 866-510-9025, then you can just press star star, and that will unmute you so that you can ask your questions of Chris. And also, be sure to go on to Black Talk Radio Network and donate to the Black Talk Radio Network so that we can continue bringing authors like Chris and continue streaming such informative shows as Scotty's BTR News, giving you the news from a Black perspective, breaking it down. And also, you can join BTR Network, the social experience. Chris, do you use Facebook or Twitter or any type of social media?
Yeah, I do. I do. People have reached out to me. It's a law. You can go to Straight Black Man, Gay Black Family at Facebook.com. I mean, at Facebook, and you'll look at me. Or just Google Christopher Boyd. Put in Christopher Boyd, and I got two different Facebook. I got one directly for the book, and then I got my own. So, yeah. And also, same thing with Instagram, Twitter. Yeah.
Okay, so Instagram and Twitter is the same. Give us that again so that people can find you.
Straight Black Man, Gay Black Family at Twitter.
Okay.
And Straight Black Man, Gay Black Family at Instagram. Yep.
All right, so you can follow him on Instagram or Twitter. And also, Chris, you should check out BTR too and join BTR. I know people on the BTR page on Black Talk Radio Network would be very interested in hearing your story.
I will.
Check it out. I think we have a caller from 610-931 from Illy, Philly.
Hello?
Yes. Welcome in. Do you have a question or a comment?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great.
Stay.
I wanted to say that I really commend this young brother for coming out with this book, starting up the dialogue that a lot of people are scared to discuss. You know, they feel as though the subject is taboo, and, you know, it's opened up the lines of dialogue for everybody. That's number one. So I just wanted to commend
Thank you.
Number two, I had an opportunity to read this book. I'm not quite finished it as of yet. And just having the courage to tell your story, you know, is great. It's not just entertaining, but it really touches your heart to know that the things that you have went through in your life and you have persevered. And I think that it's an inspiration for all of us to, you know, when things are rough and things are tough, to realize that, you know, there's always tomorrow, there's always hope, there's always a future for things to get better. So I really wanted to, you know, speak on that.
I appreciate that.
Last but not least, everyone in the listening audience, you know, I would suggest that you read this book. I just happened to come across it. The title really caught my eye, and you know, we all have people that we deal with. Our professional lives, our personal lives, I mean, that are gay and bisexual.
I think this, someone's radio. You can turn your radio down so that we get a clear sound. Well, thank you so much. Chris, you have any comments?
Yep.
You have any comments to the caller?
Hello?
Yes. All right, so caller from, you know, coming to you at 267-269. You can turn your radio down. Caller at 804-329. I think I may have muted you, but I think you did have a question. Yes. Caller 804. Someone can turn.
Oh, Black Rose, give me just a second. Black, I'm sorry.
Caller 804, question or comment?
Yes.
Welcome in. What's up? Namaste.
Yes.
Who is this on? It's on, it's the line 215. I've muted them. I've muted them. Okay. That's where all that noise was coming from. Sorry to interrupt.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Scotty. You have a question or comment? Maybe not. Okay. Let's see. All right. Chris, are you still there? Did I meet Chris? Chris?
Yep.
All right. All right, Chris. Well, Chris, let's see. I think we have one more caller for you. Yes, caller 215.
215-758.
Yes, great. Thank you. Welcome in. How are you?
How are you?
Great. I'm well. Thank you. Do you have a question for our guest, Chris?
I just want to say that that book is a very good book. I read it.
Yes.
The author, I kind of know him. I'm so proud of that guy. It's a really great book, though. And if all the listeners out there go purchase the book, it'll be something life-changing and experience for you guys.
Thank you so much for calling and sharing that.
I appreciate that.
To second you on that one, caller. Definitely a good book. Be sure you pick it up. Chris, let everybody know where they can find your book and how they can follow you again. And we sure thank you so much for taking the time to come on tonight. Yeah, so how can people purchase your book and follow you?
Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, BooksAMillion.com, GreenIVPublishing.com, Black and Nobel. You can go there and get the book or order it online. And you can reach me on Facebook at Straight Black Man, Gay Black Family on Facebook. And the same thing with Instagram and Twitter. Straight Black Man, Gay Black Family on Twitter.
So can we look for a part two to this book? Because, you know, I will not give away the book, but you kind of left me like at the end. I was like, oh my goodness.
I know. You know, it's funny because I have a part two in my head.
Ooh, in the night.
I do. Okay. Yep, I have it in the head.
Okay.
I just haven't put it down yet. Yep. So, you know, it's just so much, you know, between your secular life and secular employment, and you got to do this and being father and great. Mm-hmm. You know, you got so much to do in life.
Yes.
Took time to write this one, but I definitely left the book like that on purpose.
Okay, yeah. Okay, all right.
I did that on purpose.
How long did it take you to write this book anyway?
2 years.
2 years, okay.
And I told you that was with the interruptions and, you mm-hmm. know, and everything. So, and the computer crashing and have to doing it over again. And yeah, so.
Yes. Yep. Well, you know what? I've heard of people working on masterpieces for 10 years. So for you to produce this masterpiece, for 10 years, for you to produce this in 2 years, that's still commendable. Whenever you put it on paper, it's good, because that's the time when it was time for your masterpiece to reach the world. So do we have any closing comments or questions for Chris before we let Chris tiptoe out of here? We sure thank him so much.
Thank y'all for having me. I enjoyed it.
I commend you for putting this out on paper. It's hard to do. It's really not easy to put all of what's happened to you, your feelings and everything, your family on paper. And that's so commendable. And it's helping so many people, and it's going to help so many more people.
I hope it does. I really hope it does.
It will.
Yes.
Thank you.
It's already.
Well, Chris, we look forward to also a play or a movie on your book as well. Because, honey, I would be sitting there like,
what's going on?
That would be that's definitely a goal that I would like to have. Yeah, I would like to have. I would definitely like that to happen. I would love that to happen, actually.
We'll have to stay in touch, because we'll have to have you back here on the Lotus Place. Maybe we can have like a book reading.
Okay, that would be fine. I'm definitely going to get on the website, what was it, the
go to Black Talk Radio Network and go all, right, scroll all the way down on the right hand side. You'll see this large icon of a bee.
Okay.
And just click on that.
Okay, I sure will. Certainly. Thank y'all again for having me.
All right. Peace. Bye. Thank you so much. Peace. Namaste.
Namaste.
Blessings and best wishes and success.
Thank you. Thank you. Have a good night.
You too. Thank you so much for sharing your story. All right, and that was author Chris Boyd here at the Lotus Place sharing his book with us, Straight Black Man, Gay Black Family. If you are interested in reading a story full of love, betrayal, violence, sex, romance, oh my gosh, community love. We didn't even get to the part of him talking about the community aspect that I love so much, so we'll have to have him back, because what I love so much about the book, another point in the book, something significant, he spoke a lot about his community and how the community, the people knew each other and they looked out for each other. People knew his mom, people knew him, they knew his father. And I just remember times like that. I was watching this, what was I watching? Oh yeah, I was watching this documentary called The Mafia in Detroit. But in the beginning, the people were talking about how they could keep their doors open. And I remember, I really remember, like older people talking about, yeah, we could keep our doors. Even when I was younger, we could keep our doors open. Many people could keep doors open. And I always talk about this, like my father's neighborhood, even in Memphis, where he lived for years, he could keep his door open. His back door remained open until he went to bed at night. And so I think that maybe, I wonder if there are still many neighborhoods where you can keep your door open, but just hearing about how people could keep their doors open, it was so nostalgic. And I know Delta can relate to that down in Mississippi, down there yeah, where we could too. Certainly.
Yeah. And they still do it right now, even where my mother lives. We go and leave the door unlocked. I leave my door unlocked. I could be gone all day long and the door stay unlocked.
Stay unlocked. Isn't that something? Even now, Delta?
Even now, right now, yeah.
Oh, I can come in there and get me something, a TV, VCR, VCR.
No, you can't do it, because we found out you got so many little neighbors that's here.
Yes.
And if you pull up and the neighbor don't know you, this car or know you, they call it the law.
Oh, yes. I had some neighbors like that. When we would pull up, we didn't keep our door open, but when we would come home, they would come out and they'll say, you had a blue car. It was like a Caprice or whatever, a blue this, a blue that. Blue Lincoln, and it was a man in it. Then you had a burgundy car that came back. I mean, they would tell you, if they could get the license plate, they'd try to get that for you. But neighbors looked out for each other, and it was just so beautiful. Our neighbors continued to
a lot of people say nosy neighbors, but a lot of times it's good to have nosy neighbors.
It sure is. Yeah, to get us your hot neighbor topic, they looking out for you. You have a hot topic for us?
My hot topic is, well, we remember a while back that there was a black lady doctor on the Delta airplane, and someone on the airplane got sick, and they asked for a doctor. And the young lady noticed that when the white people suggested that they was a doctor, she jumped up and she said that she was a doctor.
Right, I remember that story.
The white students asked her for her credentials. Then she was startled. She said she was taken back. Then she said, then a white doctor jumped up. Two of them. They didn't ask for no identity. They didn't ask for anything. They said she didn't look like a doctor.
Right.
But as of today, Delta has made a change. It started December the 7th. If someone gets sick on a plane and they said that they is a doctor on board, they cannot ask for ID to prove they're a doctor. So we must realize one person can make a difference. Don't let nobody tell you one person can't make a difference. Okay, now down in Florida, we have a mother down in Florida, and I want some feedback on this one. We have a mother down in Florida that her son broke, him and three other boys broke into some, where they, well, I guess you could say break in. They left their car doors unlocked. The young man went in and took a cell phone, and they took a credit card. His mother, which is a black mother, took him to school and realized that her son had a very expensive cell phone. She realized that this, she did not purchase the cell phone, so she took the cell phone and went back home and went through it and found out who the owner was. She contacted the owner, and the owner said that it was stolen from her car. Then the owner said the credit card was stolen and used. The mother called the police and had her son arrested and put in jail for a few days. Now the mother wants the police. Now, this is what I don't like about the story. The mother wants the police to put house arrest on her son. And only way I can see if she wants house arrest, unless she having problems with him and she can't do anything with him. But if you start to going down that road, bringing the white policeman and the white system into your business, you're going to wish the day you never done it, because they're gonna, your boy will have the longest record by the time he gets to be a young adult. Now, what is your feedback? Do you think that she insists in trying to get him put on house arrest? And I think that's the most, we know that's the most worst thing that you can do, because he will have a record, and that record is going to follow him.
Well, so no, I think she just needs to be a better mother and just maybe patrol him and police him herself. Those are my thoughts on that. Maybe she needs to reevaluate her parenting style. And I hate to be judgmental of parents, because I'm not a parent, but I've been around enough people with children and enough children. What do you think, Feather?
It's really hard to say. I can't. I'm a parent, but I just, some things I just can't even fathom. And if I were to respond, I'd be judgmental. It's just not something that I would do. I don't know where her mindset is to be. I don't know.
Scotty has some thoughts on that.
Yeah.
Scotty, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm a parent, so I will be judgmental or whatnot. Look, she did the right thing.
That is correct, Scotty.
She did the right thing in taking the phone from him and finding the owner. She then was able to contact the owner. She should have worked out something with the owner for that boy to pay restitution. Now, what I don't know is, when she called the police on him, did they charge him with theft? I mean, if it's one of them.
Yes, they did.
So, yeah. See, that's just ass backwards. I'm sorry. This person not paying attention to this system and how it treats us. Now, that's not making excuses for the boy or trying to get him off lightly, but she found the owner of the phone. I would have tried to deal with that owner and said, you know, I don't want my boy to have a record. It might hurt him later on down the road or whatnot. But I tell you what, do you need housework done? I will make sure that he's here to do whatever you need him to do, if we can just leave the authorities out of this. That's how I would have handled it.
I think that's the perfect way to handle it. Like people used to do. Okay, you're going to go over there. Oh, you went over there and did that to Mr. Johnson? You're going to go over there and sweep his porch. You're going to cut his yard. You'll do this. You'll do that around the house. Versus putting him in the system.
It reminds me of the black woman who had a domestic violence situation going on. And the police came, and I think the guy shot the police or whatnot. So then she gonna come out and say, "I
don't want to hear nothing else bad about police. Black Lives Matter need to shut up. Now, where all that come from? What Black Lives Matter? See, that's like a person who is just wrapped up in their own little world. And we're not saying that all police is bad, but you know, it's enough of them that it keeps making the news that they're killing all these people. So that's what that kind of reminds me of, a black people trying to show white people that, hey, we not like the other black ones. We for the police. Right. We for law and order.
I know that's right.
We good black folks.
We do good. Well, we need to get ready to close out, but Feather Light, before we close out, you have mind, body, and spirit for us. We can't leave the Lotus Place without a mind, body, and spirit to take us on throughout the rest of the week.
Let me see. What will I do?
What about the, I thought you were going to give us that spoken word. I was ready to snap. Do my little snap. Spoken word.
Let's see. Okay. My theme song. My theme song is I'm Coming Out.
And love it.
Right. It's been my theme song for a long time. So, you know, Shaq had a theme song, did how he saw himself, mm-hmm. and how he saw the world around him. So, a theme song can mean many things to a person. But mine was more so my throat chakra is opening up. Okay? Mm-hmm. It's been blocked for a pretty good while due to childhood trauma. And it has only recently begun to open.
I didn't get a chance to say what my theme song is.
Oh, okay. What's your
theme? Delta may have a theme song. My theme song is, I have a few of them, but Firecracker. That's my
theme song.
When I walk in the room, it's like bang, 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 bang. I come in like Marcus Garvey. I'm a whirlwind. Woo! Woo!
Woo, everybody!
Delta, what's your theme song? We did find one. Yes, Scotty may have one. What's your theme song, Delta?
It would be all the Barry White song. I like to walk in very sexy and very sophisticated.
So all the Barry White songs.
All of the Barry White songs. Mm.
All right, then. Anyone in particular, Delta?
Well, they have one about this music, like the one that he sang, I Wish It Had Been Me, and how he, I'm not saying it exactly right, I got it on my phone, but it's where he's talking about how he's stroking you and you the one and you the one for me. Always coming to me. You the one that turned my whole world around.
Oh, okay. Turn around. Okay, well, we'll get it. We'll have to play that one for you, Delta. And I'm coming out. All right, then. Okay. All right. So, your spoken word, Feather Light.
Okay. I was just trying to see if Scotty had one. Okay.
Oh. So, Scotty, do you have a song? Do you have a theme song, Scotty?
No, not really. Soft and Wet, maybe.
Soft and Wet by who? Prince?
Yup.
Oh, hey, Soft and Wet. Ow!
He said, no, not really. Soft and wet. Off the top of his head. Well, maybe.
No, not really.
Mad at your ass.
I'm not mad at it. I like that one too. All right. Okay. So I will run over just a few more minutes so that we can have this peace this spoken word piece, if you don't mind. I hope we can.
Okay. Okay, here we go. I'm going try to run through it. All right, so I wrote this piece relative to the throat chakra back in 2003. And it is called Talk to Me. Talk to Me. Verbal expression. My Achilles heel. My Himalayas. Tongue often locked in place. As if in a centuries-old trance, unable to break free, trained a silence. Thoughts that seem so clear, so back and forth, like electric bolts, yet unable to form into syllables, then form into words, waiting to pass that magnificent gatekeeper. As if to do so would betray my inner being, my inner emotion. 1,001 annotations dancing and whirling around inside my head, restrained by an invisible force so strong it seems impossible to shatter. Minutes pass without uttering a word. How frustrating. How utterly frustrating. To many, it is as simple as breathing. Expression roll past their tongue and exit with ease like water blown down a waterfall. But for me, it is like balancing on a tightrope. I weigh every word, every word, until I feel that trust that says, it's okay, you're mine. He heard. My throat chakra. I know. Open it.
Namaste. Namaste. I love that. Being able to open up your throat chakra. And we were talking about this, and you made a significant point about being able to express yourself and speak when you feel like you want to say something. But opening up your throat chakra is about also having that balance. And anybody maybe can just talk and talk about anything. Right. But
Some people say I have no trouble speaking. Mm-hmm. You know, but that's different. Just because a person is speaking doesn't mean that they are speaking their truth. Some people can just talk constantly,
mm-hmm,
about nothing in particular, nothing specific, nothing of any value. They're just constantly speaking. Mm. And that person has too much energy going into their throat. It's like diarrhea of the mouth. They cannot stop talking.
Oh,
this too, yes, is an imbalance in the chakra.
Having
a balanced throat chakra means speaking your truth, being true to yourself. Not just talking and not saying anything. So,
what do you mean about speaking? Expound a little bit on speaking your truth. Like what?
Like what you feel. Sometimes people can speak, but they're speaking lies. They're speaking gossip. They're speaking things that they know nothing about.
So it's just like wasteful conversation conversation without substance. Just some people, like, they want to just talk and just fill up airspace. And I say, oh my God, they're burning the hair out of my ear. Just constantly talking. I mean, they'll find a conversation about a rock that we pass by just so they can have something to say. And it's like, it's okay to walk in peace and silence sometime and be with yourself and your own thoughts.
Exactly. That is a sign of too much energy going into the throat chakra, because something is blocked somewhere else, so it's shooting up too much energy, and it's not a balance. It's not a balance. So with me, in my particular case, my throat chakra
was somewhat blocked.
Mm-hmm.
So a balanced throat chakra, the concept of a balanced throat chakra is that we can make a choice. We make a choice as to really our life consequences. When you can feel free to use, when your throat chakra is really open, balanced, like it should be, if you have the power to make your own choice. Sometimes people will say, "Would you do this for me, please, please?" When you really don't want to do it, and you say, "Okay," mm-hmm. you're not speaking your real truth, and then you end up with resentment. You end up with anger. You end up punishing yourself. You end up drained because you're not speaking your truth. You don't feel that you can speak up for yourself. You don't feel that you can say what you mean. That's the part that's really helping me. Say what you mean. Mean what you say. Those who matter don't mind. And those who mind don't matter. If they're going to give you a hard time about it or distance themselves away from you because you've spoken your truth, you know, if you can't speak your truth around them, you're not being true to yourself.
Oh, I totally agree with that. Now, I can speak my truth, but there are many occasions whereas I really feel like I could have spoken my truth a little bit more, given more conversation to my truth, a more dialogue around my truth, or just spoken up for myself. There have been numerous times where I know I've let people just completely walk over
me. It's hard for me to speak up for myself. I can't do it.
That's your throat chakra.
Unless I really get pushed, then I'll say something.
Then it usually comes out with the force or in a way that you really didn't mean it.
Yes.
But you've been holding it so long and it's just like, no!
Yep, have to let it go. Well, listen, we need to close out. We can pick back up on the throat chakra because, my goodness, I know mine is not as open as it needs to be. Thank you so much, Featherlight. Thank you, Delta. Thank you, Chris Boyd, for coming in and sharing your book with us tonight. Thank you, Scotty. Thank you, listeners. Peace and good night and namaste.
Namaste.